session number 14620, reel 1.
Major Smith, reel 1. You were telling me you were born in Sunderland.
Yes, that's correct. In a place called Hastings Street, Sunderland.
Which year was that?
In 1924.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a commercial traveller.
Did you go to school in Sunderland?
Yes, I went to the one of the local elementary schools, and then to the technical school. And then from there I became an apprentice with a firm of marine engineers. And that was right at the start of the war.
What had been your reaction when you heard the news that we were at war with Germany?
I was still at school when the war started. The plans were that the school would be evacuated. It would be closed in Sunderland and it would be evacuated to the Yorkshire Dales. And we were, in fact, sent to Askrig, and our school was hosted by Yorbridge Grammar School, a very famous Dales school. They didn't take too kindly to this influx of townies from Sunderland, but generally the local people who we were billeted with were marvellous. They treated us just like their own family, and in my particular case I kept contact with the families that I was billeted upon right up until eventually they died. It was marvellous, really.
In what way did they not take kindly to townies?
Well, for example, headmaster of this rather nice country grammar school felt he was being pushed out of his own school. I think we rather outnumbered him. He sort of accused us of damaging his laboratory and his library and the floor of his hall, and generally we became a bit unwanted, and we were eventually pushed out to the Wesleyan Chapel Church Hall in Askrig and one or two other local buildings to hold our classes.
Was it true that you'd done any damage?
Well, maybe, I don't know. Boys are boys, I suppose. Looking back, we might have done. But again, it wouldn't be anything very serious. But, you know, just the way it is. We were interlopers, and as time went on, we became probably a nuisance. I don't know.
Was there much difference between the Sunderland boys and the local children?
I don't think so. We mucked in. There may have been the odd rivalry, but so what? Kids are like that, aren't they? I know I was 15 at the time, and we got on rather well, particularly with the local girls. But I look back on those days with great pleasure, and whenever I go up to the Dales, I have a very nostalgic tour around visiting the places that we were involved with, and where we lived, and places that we involved with. For example, the winter of 1939-40 was extremely cold and extremely hard and extremely long, and the snow was deep, roads were blocked. I was billeted on a farm about a mile from the village of Bainbridge, and we were snowed in, and in fact we had hay dropped by the RAF to feed the sheep and cattle. We couldn't go to school because the roads were blocked and couldn't get through. Snow ploughs were out, but they weren't very effective. You had to hand dig your way through some of the big drifts. The lake at Semmerwater was frozen over. The ice was so thick that you could drive an army lorry on it. And we kids had great fun being towed on our skates behind a 1500 weight army lorry that was driving around on the ice, pulling us around. Great fun. And we would sledge, skate, great fun.
It's interesting that you should say that, because some people seem to claim that it was a trauma for children to be evacuated. Some of the books that have been written.
I know. No way was that my experience. It was. You get both stories. You get stories from the children saying how badly treated they were. You get stories from the hosts saying what little horrors they were. And to my view, it is simply the media picking out the horror stories that they like to repeat. I would think that by and large, most of us, and those of my contemporary, had a great time and enjoyed it. And I know that many of them kept contact with their hosts long after the war was over.
Were you in any of the early bombing of Britain by the German Air Force?
Yes, I was. When I reached school leaving age, I returned back to Sunderland just in time to catch the end of the phony war and the bombing that started. And Sunderland, being an industrial area, and the nearby River Tyne area was quite a target, and there was quite a lot of bombing in that area. I joined the Auxiliary Fire Service, as it was then, later the National Fire Service, and first of all as a messenger, because I was too young to be a fireman, then a junior fireman, and then a dispatch rider. And I tell people that the defence medal I wear, which I was awarded for my service in the fire service, is the medal I earned. All the others, well, not quite so. Because I was more frightened, more, I suppose the modern word is traumatised by scenes and actions in the Blitz in Sunderland and the North East than I ever was subsequently.
Can you describe some of the things that you saw in Sunderland at that time?
Oh yes. On one occasion the sirens went, and late in the evening got dressed, put on my uniform, jumped on my bike, roared off to our station, which was down in the centre of the town. Then we were sent out to action stations, the idea being that the fire pumps and so on were dispersed. Instead of all being in one place, they were dispersed around the area so that, you know, if a bomb should hit them, they wouldn't take the whole unit out. And it was scattered around. And also they were nearer places where things might happen. Our particular action station was a convent, and our action station was a convent, Summer Leighton Convent, I always remember it. And the crew had gone down into the shelter to talk to the nuns and to have a cup of tea with them, leaving me, the messenger, to listen out on the telephone. I heard a German plane flying over, and being curious, I looked out of the door and could see the searchlights and NACAC guns going off and whatever. And I was standing with the door partly open, with one shoulder against the door and one against the door jamb, when all of a sudden there was an enormous flash and a huge blast which blew the door and me, door open, tumbled me backwards into the room. I got up and immediately the telephone went, and very nervously and shaking I answered the phone, and the station officer, I remember him saying, "Steady on, lad, steady on. Take your time, steady on. Get this down." And he gave me the address down in the east end of the town near the docks of the incident we were to attend. So I got that down, ran down the shelter, got the crew out, and we got mobile. I got my little motorbike out as well and followed them down through the centre of the town. I always remember driving down the high street in Sunderland, driving over all the broken glass, crunching, crunching, and wondering how the tyres on my motorbike could stand up to it. Then we got down to this working class area of terrace streets, and a landmine had been dropped. And our job, the whole street was devastated, incredible, and there's a horrible smell of smoke and dust and whatever. And the ARP chap in charge told us off to deal with small fires that were burning, because in those days people had coal open fires, and of course when the house was demolished these fires were still there, and you know, there were gas leaks and whatever, so there were small fires all over in amongst this debris, and there were people trapped in the debris. You could hear them crying and shouting and so on. And one particular, we went to put a small fire out with a hose, first aid jet. And while we were there, one of the rescue party said, "Here, lad, give us a hand with this." And we were lifting heavy roof timbers, and underneath there was an old lady. And I, being a young lad, was sort of helping to burrow down, because I was smaller than them. I could get down to see if she was all right and whatever. And eventually I did just that. Anyway, we eventually came to lift something, and I was struggling away trying to move a piece of heavy timber off it, and a chap came along to help me, and he was making matters worse, so I swore at him rather strongly. And then eventually he did what I wanted him to do, and we got timber lifted, and we managed to ease this old lady out, and she got taken away by first aid party. It was then I discovered the chap I'd sworn at was my father. He was in charge of the first aid party that had turned up on the scene. And it wasn't until the next day said to me, "I never knew you knew language like that." But the same incident, I went to another place a bit further along the street, and it's rather ghastly. There was this wrecked room, wrecked building. It was obviously a bedroom, and lying in among the debris on what's obviously been a bed, there was this woman. At least I presumed it was a woman. And she'd been split open down the length. Can you imagine it? And in the light of the torches and whatever and the flames, you could see this. And I turned away and was sick and crying and shaking.
Was it the effect of blast?
Just seeing that. And then an old copper came, put his arm around me, cuddled me. He upsets me even now. Put your arm around me and cuddled me and said, you know, steady on, lad. You know, go and take a walk along the road, come back again. I always remember that. And that was me finished for the day. You know, I just wandered around in the days after that. I can't remember anything more, really, but it really was horrific. And that haunts me forever.
Was it the effect of blast that had mutilated him?
I presume so. But, God, it was a terrible sight. That was only one. Then we had a few exciting things. We had the main department store in Sunderland was called Binns. And it had, it was a big store. It was on two sides of the main Fawcett Street. And it was hit with a container of incendiary bombs and set on fire. And we called in assistance from all around County Durham. And this blaze went on all night. Now, one part of Binns had two stores on either side of a back lane in between. And across this back lane, there was a two-story bridge for access between the two stores. And I was in the newer part of the store, and the fire was in the old part, and we were looking across this bridge, and there were difference in levels, and there was about three steps down from the old store down to the floor level of the new store, and we were crouched down behind these three steps with a jet, you know, squirting water and holding the fire back, and placed along the bridge there were wardrobes, furniture set at a little angle, you know, for display, and the heat was so intense that every now and then these wardrobes would burst into flame, and we'd turn the hose on and put it out, and we thought we were holding the flames back. And then the professional fireman, a chap called Sergeant Allison from the old Sunderland Fire Brigade, he was in charge. He came rushing up to us and said, get out, lads, get out. Leave the hose, get out. Fire's coming away under the basement between the two stores. So we ran to the back of the store to the service stairs where the staff used, and the smoke and flames were coming up the stairwell. And I remember going down those stairs. There was 10 steps and a landing, 10 steps and a landing, or thereabouts. And I jumped from landing to landing. We got out all right. But I always remember that again, the flames coming up. It was exciting that night. We pumped the park pond dry. And in the end, we had to pump water from the River Weir right along Fawcett Street with a relay of hose pipes, about a quarter of a mile, half a mile along the street. That fire burnt right through to the next morning and gutted the store completely. It wasn't rebuilt till after the war. Anyway, what else? Oh, do you want some more of this?
Yes, please. Were there occasions when the fires of one night couldn't be put out and were left to burn all the next day?
I wouldn't know. Yes, I think that did happen occasionally. The problem, of course, was it was lighting up the area for other bombers coming. That was the danger, of course. That's why we tried to get them out. I think one fire that burned for a long time was at Jarrow on the Tyne. We were called in to assist the local brigade over Jarrow. What had happened was that a bomb had ruptured one of the Shell Mex and BP oil tanks on the edge of the Tyne at Jarrow. And this is on the edge of what's called locally the Jarrow Slacks, which is a sort of mud flats. And the oil, the burning oil, the bomb had ruptured the bund around the oil tanks, and the burning oil was running out of the bund down the river bank into the river, and the burning oil was being carried downstream towards the shipyards at South Shields and the docks at Tyne Dock. So what the local brigade and others were trying to do was rig up a boom out of bulks of timber and whatever to try and stop the burning oil going down the river to contain it. Now, in order to get to the sort of landward side of the bund, they had to go across these mud flats. Now, on these mud flats, there were walkways of timber that had been laid, presumably for access or whatever reason. And we had to go out to secure the landward end of the boom and walk along these black, slimy walkways, illuminated by our torches and by the flames from the burning oil tank. And as we walked along, the Germans started dropping small anti-personnel bombs. But these things would go plop into the mud, and some of them exploded, but because they went plop deep into the soft mud, when they did explode, they just threw all the mud up. But nonetheless, it was pretty frightening hearing these things whistling down and hearing the plopping of them. So, you know, one or two of us hit the deck, and of course you missed and you went into the mud, so we were covered in black, smelly slime. Ugh, terrible.
Did they get the bund?
We got the bund and eventually sorted it out, and I don't know, eventually they got the fire out, but my bit, you know, I wasn't involved in the final involvement with it. But that was the exciting bit. When we got back to the unit, covered in black slime, the lads looked at it, and then they turned the hose pipe and hosed us down. So, and we got sent off home because we were soaking wet and cold. And the men got an issue of rum, but I was only a young man. I wasn't allowed to have any rum. It's probably just as well.
How old were you, about 17?
Probably about that, yeah, something like that. Must have been.
Any other incidents you remember going to?
Oh, yeah. There's a fire in Sunderland, Hendon Dock. We had a paper mill in Sunderland, and they used to import esparto grass for making high-quality paper from Spain or somewhere. And this esparto grass was stored in a corrugated iron hut, quite a big one, on the dockside. And when we got to the job, the whole of this hut was red hot. Can you imagine a great big corrugated iron shed, completely red hot? And when you squirted the water on it, it was like spitting on a hot plate. It just went into, you know, and bounced off. Nothing you could do. You couldn't put the fire. You just had to leave it. Quite interesting, that, to see. And there was plenty of water. We had the whole of the dock to draw water from, but we couldn't put that fire out. It just eventually burned out about 3 days later.
Did you get the impression the German Air Force was aiming at what you might call military targets, or just random ones?
Oh, yes, I'm pretty sure they were. I mean, the docks and the industrial area, shipyards, were vital, I would think. I don't think they were... Oh, I think almost certainly they were legitimate military targets. I mean, any bombs that dropped in the surrounding countryside were probably German sort of... what's the word? Missing out or overshooting their target or dropping their bombs in order to get the hell out of it. I don't think they were, certainly in that stage of the war, terror bombs. They were definitely aiming for industrial targets. I may say they had some success. You weren't sort of told about it at the time.
How was public morale standing up to the bombing in Sunderland?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. Casualties weren't all that heavy. But my impression was that it was a fact of life. You got on with it, you know. People mucked in and got things sorted out.
Did you feel frightened?
Like the South Durham Street incident, not half I was. Terrified. Some of the other jobs, I was probably too young to be frightened. I was more probably the wrong word to use. Elated might be the word. With, you know, being in action, being involved and doing things. I think that's a great thing in any war or any activity. If you're involved, doing something and whatever, you don't have time to be frightened. You don't have time to wonder what it's all about. That comes afterwards. You get on with the job. Tackle the job in hand and deal with it.
Any other specific incidents you went to that you remember?
Yeah, there was one in Newcastle, Manners Goods Station, as it was then. They had a warehouse there that was full of butter or margarine and sugar. And that got hit and set on fire. And the burning sugar and margarine were running down the bank, down the gutters. And we sort of dammed them with sandbags. It always grieved me that all these things that were in short supply were being spoilt and ruined.
They were running in the gutters?
Yeah. Molten sugar and molten margarine or whatever it was.
What was Manners?
That's the name of the station. Manners Goods Station. It was, I don't know whether it's still there or not.
M-A-N-O-R-S,
Manners, yeah. Just above the quayside in Newcastle Quayside. Anyway, probably still there. I don't think it's a good station anymore.
Any other places that you were called out to outside Sunderland apart from Jarrow and Newcastle?
No, that's all really. No.
Did you feel that the Sunderland Fire Service